get a look at the people and places we're talking about in this show, and to find out how you can call or email in a tip, visit our website, downthehillpodcast.com.
When you hear the clip down the hill, what does that do to you?
It makes me sick. Literally, I hate those words. I hate those words. And it's crazy how three words can just really disrupt.
"30 minutes. That's all it will take to disrupt this case and everything we know about it.
The information we're about to get, it's not a lot. But it's the most police have ever released about what happened out there that day.
It will make this murder case unique. We're about to get a brief glimpse into Abby and Libby's final moments, to imagine what they saw and what they felt. That's different.
That's what separates this one from all the others. What happened before and after that small look has hatched thousands of theories.
One thing everyone can agree on, though, is the fact that on this day, February 22nd, 2017, 30 minutes will set the tone for everything to come.
Police are also examining this Snapchat photo. It was taken just before both girls disappeared.
I made the announcement that the girls had been found and it was not to a good end.
We are investigating this as a crime scene. We suspect foul play.
Law enforcement is saying that one of the girls actually took video on her iPhone. They say it was right before she was murdered.
It's amazing that we have a video, we have a still photograph, we have sound, and we don't know who this person is.
It could be half of the white males in Carroll County.
To the killer who may be in this room. We likely have interviewed you. We know that this is about power to you. And you want to know what we know. And one day, you will."
This is Down the Hill, the Delphi Murders.
We are back here at CNN Center in the writer's room. I'm Drew Iden.
And I'm Barbara McDonald.
We want to say thanks to you folks for joining us as we kind of walk through the storyline here of what happened in Delphi. And what we know right now is that two girls, Abigail Williams, 13, and Liberty German, 14, have been murdered. And we know they were walking on a bridge shortly before those murders. And in the wake of that, some photos have emerged. There's two Snapchat photos, Abby on the bridge and then one of the bridge itself. And then there's two photos of a man, grainy pictures of a man on the bridge. We don't know when that day. We don't really have any specifics, but they're pretty spooky. We also know that there was a search warrant that was served on a home just outside of town. It didn't seem to yield anything. There were no arrests. And then there's been no arrests anywhere else in town either. So we're essentially at zero, it appears, from an investigative standpoint.
But at the same time, the story is growing in terms of interest across the country and beyond. This is already the biggest news story in the state of Indiana. It is quickly growing as a national story and international story. People want to know, who is the man in that picture on the bridge? What did he see? What does he know? Is he the guy who did this? As we go through this journey together, we're trying to answer the big questions. Who did this? What the hell happened out there that day? And how hasn't this been solved yet?
And in any case like this, there's inevitably moments in an investigation where things pick up speed and pick up momentum. And as we move forward in the story, we're going to get those.
Today is one of those days. We are going to begin to see some evidence. We're going to hear a clip of audio that is going to completely ratchet up the creepiness factor on this story.
Part one, Devil's Dialogue.
We do have breaking news tonight in the murders of two teenagers in Indiana. Liberty German and Abigail Williams went missing last week after going hiking. Their bodies were found the next day. And for the past week, we have been looking at this image, an image of a man officers call the prime suspect in the case. And new tonight, we are hearing for the very first time three words muttered by an unknown man in the vicinity of those two girls on that day.
Today is when Libby's phone really takes center stage. We find out that not only did police find it, but there's evidence on that phone that she recorded for us.
The video that has become the jumping off point for a million theories. It's the centerpiece of this story. It's the X factor that whenever I have told someone about this case, they inevitably say, oh, that's the case of the girls on the bridge and the video of the guy.
And it's creepy to think of two girls being on a bridge and recording their killer.
I think the natural next question after the discovery of this video is, how much is on the phone? What else is on the phone?
What else is there
that can kind of connect the dots of what happened out there?
And how much of it are they going to let us see?
And Barb, when we sat down with Sergeant Kim Riley, he actually told us about learning of that video.
I myself learned within probably 24 hours, I'm going to say, something like that. So sometime late in the afternoon of the next day, I'm not sure the exact time. Like I said, it's been a couple years ago. But I knew pretty early what they had, and we were trying to decide what we could do with it and what we wanted to do with it. I can't remember the exact date of when we released the photo, maybe within the first 2 weeks. I'm not sure. Actually, I think it was a little bit more than that because I was actually getting ready to go on a vacation like the 1st of March. So this case was still only two weeks old when I left.
Right. I want to go back to the video for a moment. Have you seen the whole video?
Yes.
Obviously, without telling us the parts that you don't want to release, can you tell us what that's like to watch that video?
It was scary, I guess would be one way to put it. Just seeing the feelings that were going through the girls at the time. I'm not going to say which one in particular, but just knowing that, just knowing what they knew is just frightening for a 13 or 14 year old girl to know. And I just think it kind of went through my mind over and over again for a long time. Every now and then I'll think about it. But for the first 6-8 months, I mean, it was something I was going through for all the time. I was always thinking about it. It was just very heart-wrenching for an adult to deal with it, that alone a 13 and 14 year old girl. It was scary. I felt so sad. There was nothing I could do, but that's the way it is, you know. Unfortunately, we're not there for our kids all the time, and sometimes bad things happen. And I guess that's the only way I can explain it.
A few days into the investigation, Sheriff Tobe Lesenby also saw that video and understood immediately the importance of what they found.
Do you recall when you found out that there was a video that Libby had taken?
Again, it may have been that same day or possibly the next day. It was, again, long after the initial information came into us. But, initially that was safeguarded very closely.
Did you watch the video that early in the process?
As I recall, I would say it was just a matter of days. And when I say days, maybe no more than a couple of days into it that I had the opportunity to review it.
And I know there's stuff in that video that you're not releasing publicly. Can you talk, though, a little bit about that process of watching that video and what that was like?
Early on, like many of us in our leadership roles, and many have commented since then, and Mike Patty and I have even talked about it, but for Libby to have that mindset to be able to do what she did, in my mind, I thought, she's helping here. She's telling us something. And obviously, as time went along, we found out what she was telling us. And so, yeah, when I first saw it, I guess knowing, you know, she's at the age that she is at that point, I'm thinking, she's sharp. I mean, this is great. You know, you know, it's all kudos to her for what she did there. I think it was definitely felt to be a huge asset in what, you know, we continue to do here and follow into this. And so, and I still feel like at the end of the day, so to say, that it's still going to be a plus to have that on board.
When you heard the voice, mm-hmm. what went through your mind?
My initial thought was that is Satan's voice himself. I'm a very spiritual man. So that was my exact thought, that that's the devil himself speaking.
Do you listen to people when you're walking around town, when you're sitting in restaurants? Are you listening for that voice?
Not so much during right now. But yes, in the beginning, and again, as we revisit, as more so my investigators than me, but when we revisit certain aspects, yeah, and there are times that I will go back. Actually, on my weekends that I'm at home sitting in my lazy boy, I have been known to start up that audio again, listen to it, and go, "Who is that?"
8 days after they found the video on Libby's phone, investigators held a news conference that even now is one of the story's most critical moments.
There are a couple acknowledgments I must introduce today, a couple of folks, department heads that are here. We have Delphi Mayor Shane Evans, Carroll County Prosecutor Rob Ives, Carroll County Sheriff Tobe Lesenby, Delphi Police Chief Steve Mullen, Indiana State Police Superintendent Doug Carter.
Doug Carter. You've heard his voice throughout this podcast. He started every chapter. He's state police superintendent. He's the boss. He was raised in Indiana and has a degree in management and leadership. And after 18 years as a state trooper, was elected twice as sheriff of Hamilton County, Indiana. His dad was a state trooper and his daughter is a police officer. Doug Carter is law enforcement 24/7. He's a passionate speaker. And you may even think he's a little extra. In person, though, and away from cameras, he is exactly the same. He's powerful and deliberate with his words, and he's taking responsibility, good or bad, for whatever happens in this case. And the public-facing portion of that begins on February 22nd, 2017, at this news conference.
Words tend to escape during these periods of times, and I've only had a couple of other situations in my lifetime. I'm able to stand before you and say that. Why Libby? Why Abby? Why Delphi? Why Carroll County? Why the region? Why the state? Why even in the nation? I say that because this is a classic example and a clear example that evil lives amongst us. To the family, to the community, the region, the state, as a leader of the Indiana State Police, I say I am so very sorry. Resources. It's unlikely that any of you will ever see, nor will we ever see or experience again, the level of resources that are attached to this investigation. To the media. My gosh, all I can say is to give you my sincere thanks. See, this isn't like TV. There's a perception that this can be solved very quickly. Anything that we do can be solved very quickly, but this is a testament that it can't, and we need you. We've needed you since last week. We need you today, and we need you tomorrow. And likely, we'll need the media all across this nation. So from a simple guy like me to you, I say thank you. To the people dressed funny like me and those that represent the law enforcement profession, please understand we're human beings just like you. I'd stand anywhere in the nation with people standing behind me. And I would suggest to you that every time something like this happens, a little piece of us dies as well. But I also want you to understand how committed we are as a collective one, and we will continue. I've had an opportunity to speak to my boss, Governor Eric Holcomb, a couple different times about the situation. And every time I do, I see this look that comes over his face, just like yours in this community's. And that's the unfortunate experience of experiencing evil. We're not stopping. The poster in front of you. Someone knows who this individual is. Someone knows who this individual is. Is it a family member? Is it a neighbor? Is it an acquaintance? Is it an associate? Or maybe that one guy that lives over at that one place that just kind of not right. Maybe it's his jeans. Maybe it's his jacket or his sweatshirt. Maybe it's his shirt tail. Maybe it's his posture. Maybe it's the right hand in his pocket. You see, even with technology, we need human intelligence. In other words, we need you. I'm not suggesting that science, that everything that we can do with science has been done, because we are just getting started. Abby and Libby deserve us. Each and every person listening, watching, or seeing this in some form, we need you. Libby and Abby need you. Please do not rationalize tips away. Rationalize what you think that might not be important away by thinking he would never do that to another human being. Or think, what I know doesn't matter. Let folks like the people that are standing behind me with such incredible passion and commitment and dedication to this profession make that determination. Tips are anonymous. Some might not want to talk about it because they don't want to get involved. Because they know the individual. Again, he may be a family member. Probably has family. No one will ever know. No one will ever know. There's not an agency on the planet better than helping us facilitate this than the FBI. And they're as entrenched in this as anybody. No one will know. As poor as this picture is, somebody knows. And if you're watching, we'll find you. Who's next? I hate to ask you that question. I'd give my life to not have to. But I know you've asked yourself that very question. We must recognize it. You see, we're all the same. We're all human beings. We must keep our resolve for Libby and Abby, for this community, and frankly, to ensure that good trumps evil, and it will. You're going to hear more in just a minute about what we know. Do not discount the voice that you'll hear. We will stay committed with resolve very, very rarely exhibited with human behavior until this conclusion. Please be patient. Become our partners and communicate with us as often as you can. And now from a very humble servant, that's the most blessed guy on this planet to represent the profession that I represent. To Abby and Libby, it's my hope and my prayer that you're now experiencing God's promise of eternal peace.
You would be hard-pressed to find a law enforcement member anywhere who speaks with the passion, the tone, and the focus of Superintendent Doug Carter of the Indiana State Police. This guy is making it clear from here on out that the messaging from this investigation comes from one person, and it's him.
And the optics of this presser, I think, also feed into that, because you have several men up there on the stage. They're all in their uniform with their badges. Carter is standing there at the podium with all of these men flanking him.
This is at the church, isn't it?
Yes, this is at the Delphi United Methodist Church. They needed a larger space,
right.
And so Delphi doesn't have a lot of places where you can invite the media in. This was one of them. And this is also when we begin to hear a bit of dialogue directly to the killer.
Right. He speaks directly to the person responsible. We could speak all day long about the psychology of what he's trying to appeal to, whether it's, you know, the guy's sensibilities or sensitivities. But he also says, who's next? That's the first time we've gotten any inclination that law enforcement has a feeling that there's a possibility of a repeat offense here.
Right. Earlier, there was some confusion over why they weren't telling people to be afraid. Now they're asking, who's next?
It's a bit of a contradiction.
It is, and it's a chilling question, too. Now all of a sudden we're pondering that.
And, you know, we mentioned that this press conference was at the church he invokes religion to.
He does. He talks about Abby and Libby and eternal peace. And this is a theme that we're going to see from Superintendent Carter throughout this story.
So everything begins with Doug Carter in this case. And while he is establishing that dialogue, you have to imagine that they are starting the process of putting a picture of a profile together.
That's right. And that's the FBI's role. They've been on scene since the beginning. And this presser, what we hear throughout it, it does sound like they have begun that process of trying to figure out what kind of person would have done this. What is the psychology of that person? And we're going to hear more of that.
Part 2, Sight and Sound.
The down the hill, do you believe you know what hill that was that they went down?
I believe it was right down there.
And is that a steep hill? Is it a walkable hill?
No, it's similar to this. It's pretty rough terrain.
We're about to hear from the FBI as well, and they are in this from the beginning, helping to process evidence that's found at the scene, and also helping to put together a profile of what kind of person might have done this.
The FBI's initial involvement in this case was sort of by happenstance.
Yeah, an agent happened to be in town visiting family and decided to go and participate in the search for the girls the first night. Heard the call for volunteers and went out. And so the FBI was certainly aware of what was going on very early.
9 days ago, we had an agent that was participating in the search for the missing victims. And from that moment until this morning, we have stood shoulder to shoulder with our law enforcement partners here. The FBI plays an important support role in this investigation, this joint investigation. And I'd like the community to go back to the afternoon of February 13th, Monday, February 13th, and just think, if you had an interaction with an individual who inexplicably canceled an appointment that you had together, or an individual called into work sick and canceled an important appointment or a social engagement, and at the time gave what would have been a plausible explanation. My cell phone broke, or I had a flat tire on my car. But in retrospect, that excuse no longer holds water. That may be important.
Just a note, he's about to say May 13th. He clearly means February.
Likely so are behavioral indicators that this individual may have exhibited since the afternoon of May 13th. Did this individual travel unexpectedly? Did they change their appearance? Did they shave their beard, cut their hair, change the color of their hair? The superintendent mentioned the clothes that this individual was wearing in the photo. Did they change the way they dress? Did their behavior change? Did their sleep pattern is different now? Did they start abusing drugs or alcohol whereas they would not have? Have they been anxious, nervous, irritable? Have they followed this case and what the media is putting out with a sense that is not normal? Have they had ongoing discussions regarding their whereabouts on that afternoon or thereafter?
And so while Superintendent Carter starts a dialogue with the killer, this is more of an appeal to the killer's friends and family.
Because he probably does have friends and loved ones who may already be wondering what's up, what's going on.
And all of this while there are billboards going up all over the country.
46 states, including I saw one here in Atlanta.
There's a public service announcement that goes out to all of the Indiana radio outlets.
I am Sergeant Tony Slocum of the Indiana State Police. At approximately 12:15 p.m. on February 14, 2017, the bodies of Abigail J. Williams, 13, and Liberty Rose Lynn German, 14, both from Delphi, Indiana, were found in the wooded area near the Delphi Historic Trails east of Delphi, Indiana.
Okay, let's get back to the press conference.
At this time, I would like to invite Captain Dave Burstyn, Chief Public Information Officer for the Indiana State Police, to the podium.
For the last 17 minutes of this briefing, authorities have been giving shape to the evidence that's been released. Normally, a presser like this is largely routine with a lot of procedural questions. There are rarely surprises. But when Dave Burstyn, top spokesman with the Indiana State Police, comes to the microphone, there is a brand new headline.
Thank you, Tony. We do have some new information for you today. It's in the form of an audio file from the cell phone that Liberty German had with her at the time. We're not going to play everything that we have, but Liberty had the presence of mind to turn on her video camera. Again, we're not going to be able to share everything with you, but we are going to share this audio clip with you momentarily with the hope that somebody will recognize this voice. And I want to be very clear that what you're about to hear is just four short words. Excuse me, three words. Down the hill. You're going to hear this played four times. The audio quality is not superb, but there's enough there that somebody could recognize this person's voice. And as Superintendent Carter said, not to rationalize away. If you hear this today and you think, my God, that sounds like fill in the blank, call us. Make an anonymous tip. Tell us who you think it is. Let us investigate it. If it's not the right person, they'll just be out a little bit of time and they'll be cleared and they can go on and they'll never know that you called. But you may tell us who the right person was. And you could be the person that helps us to solve this horrible crime. Micah, play the clip, please. Could you play it one more time?
Burstyn then puts together the sound with the photo of the man on the bridge. It's on an easel in front of them next to two large photos of Abby and Libby.
The image that you see there of the suspect, that came from Liberty's phone. I think many of you had speculated that before. We weren't prepared to discuss that at the time. We have more video. We're not releasing it. It's germane to our investigation. And it's important that we spread that person's voice far and wide for somebody that will recognize who that is and will call us and tell us.
I talked to a while back an audio forensics expert about these words specifically. And my question was, what can someone who does what he does glean from hearing that? You know, is there an accent? Is there kind of a regional dialect or something? I mean, it's tough because there's only three words. And basically he said to me, especially with a sample size this short, there's basically not a lot that you can get out of it.
And I think law enforcement knows that. And that's why they loop it and play it three or four times. So you are hearing what sounds like a longer clip in theory, but it is still just those three words that we have to work with at this point in the investigation. And there is a tip line that the FBI takes over. There is a website. There's an email address that people can send in tips. There's a lot of different ways that law enforcement are asking for the public to deliver that help that they've been begging for since this crime happened.
The other thing that's important to note here is that Dave Burstyn, who's kind of the chief spokesperson for the Indiana State Police, he says that they're not sharing everything. Obviously, the question is, how much more is there? Well, it sounds like there's a pretty significant amount. What other stuff is on that phone, and what's it going to tell us?
Now, also in this press conference, there's a Q&A session that happens right after. And oftentimes, that's usually when the TV cameras sort of leave and go back to their regular programming. But this one was kind of interesting. There were a couple of wow moments. Let's start going through those sort of one at a time.
Is there any specific information that says the person is local or from far away? No. Could this be a stranger crime? That's a possibility. Could this be somebody that knew that the girls were going to be there at that time? That's a possibility. Nothing is off the table.
The rest of these are tough to hear, so we'll read them for you.
Question: how long after Liberty posted to social media did this crime happen? Did the murders happen immediately after, or was there time for someone to see them on social media and then meet them on that trail?
As especially, we know that there are going to be lots of questions that we specifically cannot answer, because there are things that we do not want to tip our hand to the person that's responsible for this. That kind of information we're keeping close to ourselves. Is it reasonable to think that that's an area? One of two things happened. That was a chance encounter. That's possible. Don't think it's likely, but it's possible. Or that person knew that they were going to be there. That's possible as well. Those are things that we're looking into. Question over here.
Dave Burstyn is saying in that last question that it's possible the killer knew those girls were out there.
It was a moment that when we played this back, we all stopped and went, wait a minute, what? And so I reached out to Dave Burstyn. He's no longer with the Indiana State Police. He retired in 2019 and now is the chief communications officer for the Department of Corrections in Indiana. So he's still in the area, but he reminded me he is no longer part of this investigation. I asked him for some clarity on this statement. Did he mean to imply that it's more likely that these girls were targeted? And that isn't what he's saying. He's saying at this point in the investigation, in February of 2017, they are looking at all options.
It basically comes down to what you will hear investigators call target and target of opportunity. Those are two different things.
Correct.
The target being a perp goes with the intention of killing a person by the name of whatever.
Right.
And then a target of opportunity being the person's goal is to commit a killing or a murder. Who those people are, who they kill, is irrelevant.
Right. Perhaps he went there to commit this crime, and then Abby and Libby stumbled upon him.
Question: based upon what you have and what other investigators have seen of this crime, do you believe this individual has killed before, and what makes you believe he will do it again?
There has been no indication right now that this is part of a serial murder, if that's what your question is. So as of the facts that we have collected at this point in time, we have not tied it to any other known homicides.
Barb, it is inevitable around such a high-profile murder. It is inevitable that someone's going to ask the question, is this a serial killer? It's important to note that while that question is obviously one of the first ones that's asked, not every murder is at the hands of a serial killer. However, in this story, the circumstances surrounding the murders, because they are so different, it would lead you to believe that perhaps this was not the first time this was done.
But that is certainly something that is looked at when you have a high-profile murder, like you said, and the circumstances are different. You look at other cases. They obviously have not linked it to another homicide that they know of. But as Superintendent Carter asks, who's next?
Captain, you played three words. You have an extensive volume of video and audio. You're not sharing yet. I mean, is there more?
We have other information that we're not sharing, and specific to your question, Raphael, keep in mind that there is a likelihood, the possibility of more than one person. We're not saying that the person, that the voice that you heard is the same as this person here. This is all very complicated, very involved, and as much as we would like to tell you everything, more importantly, we want to solve the crime.
But again, rest assured, we're using our resources to put the person and or persons that murdered Liberty German and Abigail Williams into our jail here in Carroll County.
That was a lot that just got delivered. And the people of Delphi are now dealing with a very different story. Everything has changed for them. This is also where we start hearing multiple instances of them saying the person or persons.
Always struck me interesting.
Yeah. So they don't say they're only looking for one person or they may be looking for two, but they leave open that possibility that we're not sure how many people we're dealing with yet.
Law enforcement, as a general rule, I think, oftentimes has to hedge things, has to leave the door open. And they do that here, but sometimes that's not the case. Sometimes they say things for a specific reason. Unfortunately, we are left to wonder, is this hedging themselves? Is this a specific reason?
Hey, everybody, it's Dan Semitovich, and along with Barb and Drew, I produce this show. There's a lot going on in this story, but one thing we didn't want to lose in all of that is a sense of who Abby and Libby were. And we've been taking time out here and there to learn just that. This chapter, we have Libby's grandfather, Mike Patty, talking a little bit about what kind of girl she was.
She was a person who wanted as much out of life as she could possibly get. Wanted to try everything, do everything, didn't matter what it was. Whether it was from rides at the carnival to, you know, her school projects, she wanted to put as much into it as she possibly could to get as much out of it as she possibly could. Projects here at home, you know, from her room, wanting to paint it different colors, redoing her desk, which is one of the projects she was right in the middle of when all this tragedy struck. And her desk is sitting over here. We've committed that that's going to be our next project. We're going to redo her desk. Finish the project that she started. That was just how she was. She was always had an iron or two in the fire. Yep. She had a lot of stuff going on all the time.
We'll be hearing more about Abby and Libby and other folks in Delphi in future episodes. For now, though, let's get back to the show.
Part 3. I knew she was smart.
I had no idea that was coming. I had no forewarning, and I still have, I can't even, like, I have trouble saying those words. I hate to hear it.
Libby's mom, Carrie Timmons, remembers the first time she heard the audio.
But it was, the first time I heard it, it was so, like, it wasn't cleaned up yet. That very first press conference, I don't know if anybody really remembers, but that very first time that that recording was played, couldn't really understand what he was saying, and it was all like computerized sounding. And then they were able to clean it up, and suddenly it was DTH, and it was like, what the hell is he saying? Like, why? And I remember thinking that it doesn't even sound like urgent. He's not yelling. He's so calm, and still to this day is like so eerie sounding to me. But I didn't recognize it. Didn't sound like anybody I knew. Didn't sound like anybody I had ever heard before, a phrase I'd ever heard anybody even use before. Like, normally we'd be like, you know, just go. It wouldn't, like, it didn't make any sense. So that was weird. I still wish, there's times I still wish I could hear more, but I don't know how much more there is that I could handle hearing, so I don't know. I try not to think of what is actually going on when he says those words.
Carrie Timmons can't say the words, but Abby's mom, Anna Williams, is pulled in two directions about the release of the video, the audio, and the images.
Every time something like that would happen, I would hold my breath because part of you wants this over. And you hope you know who is in that picture, and you hope you recognize that voice. And then the other part of you hopes you don't, because the idea that the person is most likely here or has lived here and is somebody I may have crossed paths with, whether they knew who it was or not, or I knew them, makes you ill. And that is probably one of the hardest things to move through life on, until this person is caught that every day there's a potential of them crossing your path.
Libby's friend, Erica Gibson, is, like a lot of people, proud of Libby for capturing that evidence on her phone.
When you found out that she had actually taken a video of the guy, what did you think?
In my head, I was truly cheering her on. No one can do that. And that's, you know, that firsthand evidence there. That's the most important evidence because, I mean, people can say they saw a guy, people can draw a sketch, but, I mean, unless you have photographic memory, like, where you can remember, it's really hard. And it's even hard for me to, like, identify a person after I see them. And I think that was amazing for her because she knew something was up. She knew she had to do something, probably didn't have service, so she thought of the next thing she could, and I don't think a lot of people do think of that. She didn't know what was exactly going to happen. I don't even know if she knew the guy was bad, you know? Sometimes, like, we joke around, Abby, when Abby was out with her mom and stuff, she'd just take a photo and be like, joking around, be like, that's your boyfriend, or, you know, just joking around, and so, like, it could have started out, like, as a joke like that, and then something
else happened.
So you
guys would, what, text that to each other or Snapchat it?
We did those jokes on the volleyball bus mostly. Like, she'd take a photo, and then she'd show me. We never sent them.
Okay.
But, like, it could have been something like that, you know? Knowing them, they're skitsy people, so, like, Abby is, like, so goofy that she is like, oh, that person scares me, and stuff like that, and that's how she would act. But I feel like they thought maybe it would have been funny or something like that. I don't think they ever thought, because they get scared, but to me it's like a joking scared. So that guy must have really, I don't know, scared them to do that.
Kelsey German, Libby's older sister, feels the same way.
I was really proud of my sister. I don't think that I knew the voice or the person that was in the video. But watching the video, I was overwhelmed that my sister was able to do something like that and that she was able to know that something was going to happen. It was also very sad to know that she knew something was going to happen, like, enough to take this video. So many emotions were hitting me at once watching it that I don't really know exactly what I was feeling. I just know that I was just overwhelmed with so many emotions that it was just shocking to me. Like, I knew she was smart. I know she is smart. And she does that kind of stuff all the time. But it was crazy to think that she was able to know before something happened that she needed to do something.
She's been called a hero for that.
Yeah, and she is, but I definitely think both of them are. I don't think that one would have left the other. So to me, Abby is my hero because she stayed with my sister. And I love them both for that.
Why Libby hit record on her phone, that's still unclear. But Carrie, Libby's mom, has her own thoughts.
Do you think that Libby took that video on purpose because she was concerned?
I think she got him in the video because she was concerned, but I don't think that that was her initial purpose in taking the video. Because it was my understanding that they were out there taking pictures and video anyway. And like I'm learning now with my younger girls and Snapchat and all this other video social media, they do that crap all the time. Even if they're just picking up a rock, they're still taking a little video of it, which I'm now very thankful for, but I didn't get it at the time. So I think now, looking back, that she probably wasn't exactly videoing. I think she left it on and made sure it was recording because she knew something was not right. But I don't think that was the initial purpose. I could be completely wrong, though. I haven't seen or heard the entire video.
Mike Patty, Libby's grandfather, has his thoughts too.
And I've been asked the question, you know, is that that would have been Libby capturing that information, you know, and if things would have been different and the girls wouldn't have been murdered, she would have came home and said, "Papa, look at this. This guy was out here really acting weird. What a strange guy," you know, and would have shared that. I know that's what she would have done. And said, "This is a real weirdo, you know, out there." Of course, then we would have said, "No more trails," you know. But that's why she would have captured that. No doubt in my mind, she would have come home and said, "Look at this weirdo."
Do you recognize anything in her video or the still that they've released?
Unfortunately, no. I wish I could. And I wish I could recognize that voice. I wish I could. I've racked my brain millions of times, or thousands and thousands of times, still even to this day, thinking something's going to trigger and say, "Okay, yeah," but no, I don't.
Next time on Down the Hill, for months, we had a plan for our fifth chapter. That was until one interview gave us some brand new information about the crime scene.
All I can say about the situation with Abby and Libby is that there was a lot more physical evidence than that at the crime scene. It's probably not what you would imagine.
Down the Hill is written and produced by Barbara McDonald, Dan Samatovich, and me, Andrew Iden. With original music and scoring by Shuvo Sir, Michael Dudley and Kayleen Chassie are our associate producers. If you want to see the people, places, and things we're talking about, visit our website at downthehillpodcast.com. Sherry Selbes is HLN's Senior Production Manager. Brian Bell is HLN's Senior Director of Programming. And Tyler Moody is the Vice President of the WarnerMedia Podcast Network. We want to say a special thanks to the people of Delphi and the members of law enforcement who are in charge of solving this crime. And most important of all, a big thanks to you, of course. We appreciate you listening.